Transportation Committee will come to order. Today's Friday, February 24, 2012. The time is 8:05. President Dar, Representative Fahey, Representative Seaton, Representative Kawasaki, and myself, Representative Alan Dick. We do have a quorum, and I will remind everybody, including myself, to turn off cell phones. And I also want to mention the fact that I might be needed to for a very important bill in the Health and Social Services Subcommittee. So at some point, if I could ask everybody's indulgence, we'll call a brief at ease. I'll run up, vote, and come right back. So that might be part of the dynamic this morning. So our first order of business today is a presentation by Superintendent Rich Carlson of the Clovelock School District. Following that presentation, we will take up HB 330, dealing with state education standards. Testimony today in HB 330 is invited testimony only, which includes the commissioner. And first, I'll offer my remarks. Following that, we'll take testimony from those who are invited today to provide it. I also want to mention the problem we had with our technology in the past, where we're trying to see the superintendents. I found out they'd come in 7 o'clock in the morning, everything worked great, and the problem was that the internet was getting so plugged and everybody showed up for work. So it was not our tech people. It was just the internet just got choked down when we tried to see the superintendents. So today we're going to pass on that effort. Superintendent Carlson, thank you for joining us. Can you hear me, sir?
I can. Thank you.
Very good. Okay. Committee aide Ned Kreitzer will move us through your PowerPoint presentation when you're ready. Please introduce yourself for the record as you begin your testimony.
Absolutely. My name is Rich Carlson. I'm superintendent of the Clovelock City School District. I've been superintendent here for 11 years. And Chairman Dick and members of the committee, I appreciate this opportunity to share some of the information about our school district. In getting started, let me give you a little bit of background of the community. The community is located on Prince of Wales Island, which is in southeast Alaska. It is about 50 miles west of Ketchikan. We have a population of about 850 people, and we're primarily Alaska Native Tlingit. And if we can go to the second slide, please. Thank you. Just some information about our school district. We're a small single-site school district of 136 students. We have a certified staff of about 18 folks. As you can see, we are primarily Alaska Native. We are an impoverished school district. 73% of our population is on free and reduced lunch. And we have a relatively high special ed population of 19%. And if you look back at educational statistics, you would look at these demographics and probably think that we are a struggling school district in terms of student achievement. And I think you're going to be surprised with what you see. So if we can go to the next slide, please. Anytime you have any questions as well, please feel free to interrupt me. This is our mission statement, and I won't take time to read it to you, but I really want to emphasize that this is the focus of our school district. We believe in this, and this drives everything that we do. We believe really in a well-rounded education that focuses on the whole child. While we absolutely are dedicated to improving student achievement and through academics, we also believe that we have an opportunity and a responsibility to provide our students with a hands-on, relevant education that leads them to, to be responsible citizens. We believe in teaching work ethic. We believe in providing opportunities in creative arts. We have a music program. We have a choir program, a vocational education program. So the mission statement drives everything that we do. The next slide, please.
Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, Superintendent. We have a question from Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Is the mission statement primarily driven by the administration of the district, or is that primarily driven by the school board and the community, and how much community involvement in that mission is do you have?
That's a great question, Representative Seaton. The mission statement was developed and tweaked several different times, but developed primarily by a large group of community members, staff members, and the school board back about probably 9 years ago. We had a mission statement, but we revised it. And that was in association with an accreditation project. And when you think about mission statements, they can be sort of mundane. I have to tell you that we labored over this and discussed it, argued it for hours. And we went back and we tweaked it, and we really wanted to make certain that the mission statement reflected what the community wanted in terms of the education of their kids.
Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Go ahead.
The next slide, which is called Accomplishments, you can see academically we do relatively well. We've made adequate yearly progress in 8 of the last 9 years. We have a dropout rate. We've consistently had about low, very, very low dropout rate. For example, last year we had zero dropouts. Our attendance rate is continuously above 90%. Last year was 92.9%. And our graduation rate, which I almost didn't put on here because it's a relatively complex, confusing statistic, which is misunderstood. Ours has been very high and has always been high. Last year, it was 91.7 in comparison to the state, which was 68. But again, it's that statistic is a little bit misleading, a little bit confusing in terms of taking a look at the state averages. Next slide, please. Some other accomplishments. We have 100% of our teachers are highly qualified this year, and that remains fairly consistent, and that's based on the definitions and No Child Left Behind. We have been named among the America's best high schools in 2009 by U.S. News and World Report. Our teacher turnover is continuously under 10%, and I can tell you that it's almost always zero. Now, we've lost some teachers to retirement. We very, very seldom lose any teachers that decide to go to other school districts. Those of you that follow athletics, you probably know that we have a really very excellent athletic program. We've won several regional and state championships, and that's historical. And we have a student council which has won several awards and some national awards. So we're pretty proud of what we've done. Question might be what makes us unique. And I'd like to go to the next slide. And this I would emphasize again. This really falls back on the mission statement that we believe in very deeply. We believe in preparing our kids for real world experiences. Those of you that are employers, or if you talk to employers, they will tell you that the vast majority of people that are not successful on the job are not successful because of a lack of ability to do the job, but because of a lack of what is called soft skills. Those are skills like attendance, punctuality, respect, teamwork, cooperation. We realize that, and we implement that in our classrooms. On the high school level, we require our teachers to grade at least 10% of all of their grading on youth employability skills, which is a matrix which evaluates these sorts of skills. Next slide. We offer a wide variety of activities. I think at the last count, we have about 21 different activities from kindergarten through 12th grade. This can be taxing for a small school district because it's often the same, you know, the same people are coaching and teaching and sponsoring these activities. Next slide. This is something that is a little bit different from our about our school district. We believe in frequent communication to our students so they know what's going on within the school district. And we also believe that you need to recognize them on a continuous basis, not just, you know, once on an awards night or graduation. So every Monday morning, we begin our school day with the 7th through 12th graders in an assembly in which we let them know what's going on, the kind of activities that are going to occur during the next week, and if there's special events. But more importantly, we recognize those students that have done an outstanding job during that past week or, in the most recent past. And we celebrate things like birthdays, things like that. We do the same thing with K through 6. We do that every Friday morning. And what we find is that this adds to a sense of community. It adds to a sense of a positive school climate, and it gives an ownership to the students that they're really part of the system, and they're, you know, an integral part of what, obviously the integral part of what we do, but an integral part of kind of the everyday life. Next slide. We are big in technology is a big part of what we do. We were one of the first school districts to participate in the AASB 1-to-1 program, and today every one of our students from first grade through 12th grade have their own computer. High school students are allowed to take the computers home at night. Next slide. Again, consistent with our mission statement, we believe that we have one of the best native arts programs in the state. Our teacher, a gentleman by the name of John Rowan, is renowned across the Northwest for his wood carving. Next slide. We have a long history of providing quality vocational education programs. A voc ed teacher who is now working part-time has been with the district for 31 years. And again, we focus not only on technical skills, but on work ethic, cooperation, and pride in one's work. Next slide. We have a lot of committee meetings, and again, it's part of our culture. We really want to empower people. And so what we do is we have committees on whole variety of things, ranging from staff development to technical education. But we do it a little bit differently because we do not want to impact the instructional day. So we have our committee meetings on Saturday, and we have approximately one committee meeting a month, and they are on, again, a variety of different topics. For example, tomorrow we'll have a meeting on facilities. These meetings are very, very, they're in depth. They begin at 9 o'clock in the morning. We have a working lunch, and we go until 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We cover that topic, but we cover a variety of things. And it really provides us an opportunity for the staff, and all of the staff participate, and almost all the staff participate in these, but not all at one time, obviously. The people that we have usually 6 or 7 people on each of these committees. But it provides them an opportunity not only to get in depth in terms of the topic that we're discussing, but to really to see how the whole system fits together so that technology does not stand apart from everything else that we do. And we have found that we've been doing this for the better part of 11 years, and it's again, part of our culture and extremely successful. Next slide. As most small schools, our school, again, it's a single-site school. along with our gym, it provides, it's a community center. We have weddings in there, funerals and family celebrations, community meetings, and of course basketball. And clearly, next slide, I'm sorry, clearly we have challenges, not only the challenges that present themselves on a day-to-day basis, but we're finding ourselves particularly this year looking at some really extreme challenges looking down the road. The loss of something called Secure Rural Schools. It's a federal educational act, or it's a federal act, sometimes known as forestry receipts or timber receipts, has ended. It's going to have a major impact on our school. Flat funding from the state, hopefully not, but we're preparing for that. Is going to mean some serious staff reductions. We're having a meeting with our school board on Monday night, and we're preparing to cut between 20 and 25% of our staff. That's huge for a school district like this. We're challenged by the lack of jobs on Prince of Wales Island. During the winter, we have an unemployment rate of right around 20%. It causes families to move, which then causes enrollments to decline. We continue to struggle as a small school district. We're trying to keep up with state and federal regulations. And we're very, very proud of what we've accomplished and who we are. But there's always a challenge to make certain that we continue to do the things that we need to do to get better all of the time, and we have a responsibility to our students to do that. Next slide. And this is who we are. We are Klawok. And if I can take just a 1 second, Chairman Dick, to just editorialize just for a second, is that permissible?
Oh, please do.
I've been in rural Alaska for the last 31 years, and I've seen some tremendous changes. And I have to say, for those folks that have said that we haven't seen any progress in education, I would beg to differ. Education in Alaska has come a long way, a tremendous way. Back 31 years ago when I started, the emphasis was really keeping the lights on, the school heated, feeding the kids. It was pretty basic. We've come a long way. I fear, however, with what I see in the future, some devastating cuts that are coming, I've not seen the kinds of numbers in terms of staff cuts and gutting of programs that look like they may be coming in the next year or so ever in my career. And I understand those that say we have to save for the future and the decline of oil. I'm a fiscal conservative myself, so I totally understand it. I totally get it. But I also understand that we need to invest, and we need to invest in the future, and the future is our kids. And I know that sounds like just a soundbite, but I really believe it. So with that, I thank you for your time. I thank you for what you have done and continue to do for the kids of the state, and for taking the time to listen to those of us that have sort of boots on the ground. And with that, I'll ask if you have any additional questions.
Yeah, thank you, sir. I know you are one of the bragging points we have when we do advocate for, supporting our schools better. We've certainly had those conversations, and you're one of the ones we point to. I do have a quick question. Do you use SERC, Southeast Regional Resource Center, do you contract out to them for any of your services?
We do, for a great number of services, for special education, for preventive maintenance. We've done a number of special contracts with them. We use them a great deal, and without CERC, we couldn't provide the services that we do.
Thank you, sir. Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rich, you talk about the flat funding, and I know that there's a lot of legislators that just don't understand that because we keep putting more money in schools. And so can you explain why some schools feel flat funding and others don't, so that and also at the same time, you have some great programs that are vocational type programs. What kind of programs have you let go in order to hang on to those?
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Let me begin with the last part of it. We have not, at this point, let any programs go. Again, we scramble, and we have been fairly fortunate. We've received a number of grants and some federal funding, and so we have sort of hung on. This year, however, Peggy, I think is going to be the breaking point, and part of that has to do with again secure rural schools. It's a huge part of the funding that we have. The flat funding. When I say flat funding, it's been for us anyway. It has been funding that has been basically allowed us to sustain what we have. It's allowed us to keep up with the cost of with the cost of living, basically with the increase in energy costs, with the increase in contracts, just simply with the increase of keeping a school district running. And I appreciate everything the state has done. I really do. I don't mean to when I say flat funding that I'm not appreciative of it. I'm fearful, though, that looking down the road, we will really experience totally flat funding, in which we'll be stabilized, and that will be devastating. We will begin slicing and dicing our programs. There's simply no way around it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. I should have mentioned too that Representative Wilson, Representative Pruitt have joined us, and Representative Sisson is online. Representative Sisson, I appreciate your concern and your participation here. Representative Feige has a question, sir.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. besides the financial aid you receive from the state, what other sources of funding do you have to keep Kalaaloc afloat?
We receive .74 impact aid money. And we receive some money from the city. Representative, this is why the secure rural schools issue is so devastating to us. And I believe the commissioner is in the room, and he's heard me say this before. With the secure rural schools, it's a federal flow through program that goes to the city, and the city then gives it to the school district. In the case of Kalaaloc, the city uses that flow-through for the vast majority of the local contribution. When that money goes away, the local contribution goes down significantly, and the state of Alaska has a formula which then reduces our foundation even further, because the more local contribution you give towards the cap, the more impact aid money you get. And so for us, the impact of losing secure rural schools is about $888,000. But then the compounding effect will mean that we'll lose another $235,000 through loss of foundation. So that one hit alone for us is going to be about $425,000 out of a $3 million budget. If you do the math, that's pretty substantial.
Staggering. Thank you, Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thank you, Superintendent, for being online this morning. You know, we've heard from a lot of school districts, and pretty consistently we've heard that this year that if nothing changes, that there would be pretty significant cuts. But I wanted so your numbers are kind of in line of what we've heard from other school districts. I wanted to ask, though, of your challenges specifically, How much of the 20 to 25% cut in classified staff is reflected by, say, the federal cuts, federal receipts issue? How much of it is because you might be enacting newer programs that are part of your budget on the expense side? How much of it is because of declining enrollment? And then I have follow-up questions for that.
Based on our projections for next year, none of it is because of a declining enrollment. We've had some serious erosion of enrollment over the years, but next year we're projecting we're going to be pretty flat. A great deal of it has to do with the loss of the forest receipts, and again, because of that, the loss of some foundation monies. We have not added any new programs other than one program based on a federal grant that we've received. So we have been pretty much operating our programs at sort of a break-even point. We've again not added new programs for some time, and certainly have no expectation that we'll be doing that anytime in the near future.
Follow-up question, then Representative Seaton, then we do need to move on.
On the, as you know, there's a bill that's in on the House side now dealing with a BSA increase over 3 years. How much of an impact would that BSA increase have? I know there's also potentially one-time energy funds and transportation funds that are in separate bills moving parallel with the BSA increase, but would that mean that you wouldn't have to make any cuts, or would you still have to make cuts in your school district?
We certainly would appreciate that, and Senate Bill 171 would be something that we would really applaud and very much support, because you know it's continuous funding, looking out 3 years. The problem with anything at this point, Representative Seaton, is that the $100 on the BSA, and again, I say this hesitantly because I don't want to, I don't want to minimize how important that would be. But for us, because our enrollments are so small, $100 on the BSA gets us approximately $34,000. So if we increase the BSA by $125, that'll get us about $40,000. When you're looking at a $400,000 hole, it's still going to require some cuts.
Thank you, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, and first of all, I just want to applaud the successes you've had, but especially the community involvement and the teacher committee meetings on Saturdays. I think that we've all seen that with your teacher turnover, that comes down to engaging teachers strongly in the not only the day-to-day with each kid, but also with that ongoing partnership. So really recognize that. But I wanted to ask you about the Alaska Performance Scholarship. Are students in Kluwak looking at that to engage in that either for college or for the section that is for vocational training certification beyond high school?
Yes. The short answer is we have had, last year we've had a few students take advantage of it, and this year we have even more that are looking at it. We do have a challenge, and I'll be honest, and again, the commissioner is probably going to cut my throat for saying this, but we have a challenge because of the size of our school district. And I realize that we can take some of those courses can be taken online. And particularly for us, the foreign language track is a concern and a kind of a difficult thing to address. So our students meet that by taking an online Spanish course. And that's good, but it's not. We've had some difficulty just in terms of our kids saying that the online portion simply is not as robust as they had hoped, and not really getting as much out of it as they had hoped. The second part of that is that it's still relatively costly for, even though some of our kids get scholarships, it still costs the school district probably $300 a piece, which we hadn't budgeted for originally. We are now. So the scholarship program is a good idea. I applaud the governor and in the state legislature for implementing that. It's a work in progress, though.
Thank you, Superintendent. This is an excellent presentation, and like I said, you're one of our bragging points when we have conversations down here. So I really appreciate the presentation and your success there. Okay, we do need to move on, though. But before we move on, I need to make an apology. The last meeting we had, I made a statement that I'd made a request of the commissioner for information about maintenance. And after I had a conversation with my staff, I found that the commissioner had asked a clarifying question to my question of him, and I hadn't seen that email. So I want to make a public apology. Hope my 70 times 7 isn't up yet, and we can move on. So I did want to make that very clear for the record, and that he had actually responded to me very appropriately. So. To facilitate discussion on HB 330, I will turn the gavel over to Vice Chairman Pruitt before I begin my remarks, but I do want to remind people I might need to go to HES subcommittee, in which case we'll call a brief at ease. I'll go vote and come right back. So,
I have a question. Weren't we going to hear from the commissioner after the responses that we got last time?
Representative Wilson?
Different bill.
Okay, then we'll...
Different, though.
Okay, gotcha.
And we do have a testimony this morning. It's by invitation only. The commissioner is here going to give us the views from the department, and he's certainly one of the ones that have been invited to speak. So I will turn the gavel over to Representative Pruitt, and...
All right. At ease while he gets ready. Order. Representative Dick, go ahead and introduce yourself and give your testimony. We will be working off of HB 330. Version B should be the only one that you have. And so, Representative Dick, if you would.
Okay. Thank you, Vice Chair Pruitt. And for the record, my name is Representative Alan Dick. And I think a proper order here would be I'd like to give a brief introduction to this bill. There are some people that are lined up to testify online that have very critical time schedule. So I'm going to be brief in the beginning. We're going to hear the testimony, and then, you know, as time allows at the end, I'll expand or contract as need be. But I do want to get the – I believe the testimony of the others who are waiting online is pretty critical. So if you don't mind, I'll be concise in the beginning, and I'll do a good follow-up. And as you've seen in the sponsor statement, the state educational content and performance standards are foundational of our education system. Upon them are built a massive superstructure, the writing of the grade level expectations, the choice of expensive curricula in 53 different school districts, thousands of teachers' hours aligning new curricula to the new standards, hundreds of thousands of dollars of professional development as we teach the teachers how to implement the new standards, millions of dollars of new assessment tools, and I'll give the numbers on that later, millions of dollars using those tools annually, and over $1.2 billion of annual funding supporting the system driven by the standards. So, the standards also determine the quality, a good part of the quality of instruction for over 130,000 students in the state. So, the cost to date of producing the standards by the Department of Education and Early Development has been almost $270,000, a little over $250,000. The standards were created in 8 separate meetings and attended by what I believe was a sliver of stakeholders. The superstructure built upon them, as well as annual maintenance to keep them going, will cost multiple billions of dollars and directly impact every facet of instruction statewide. My research has clearly shown that the proposed standards have not been properly vetted by industry and those involved in the career destinations of our students. All curriculum presented to students should have a clear pathway to potential careers. At least that's my personal view. Educational funding and student performance are constantly under continual intense scrutiny. These subjects are the source of great consternation for parents, educators, and policymakers. And it only makes sense that the foundation of our educational system for the next six-year cycle should be of the highest quality and directed to fulfilling our mission statement. The purpose of this bill is to gather a representative working group that will develop a process by which the standards are vetted. Once the vetting process is developed, it will be available for all future cycles of standards creation and modification. With well-vetted standards, we can be confident that the billions of dollars spent over the next six-year cycle will bring the best possible result. We can also be confident that we're creating a clear pathway for intelligent, productive, engaged young people to become successful in whatever endeavor they choose. To do less would be irresponsible. So, in the interest of time, I'd like to point to, in your folder today, you have a document. And I'd like to speak to one particular myth. That's the how well are American students learning. And this is a document by the Brookings Institute, which is a actually the Brown Center on Educational Policy at Brookings Institute.
Does everyone have a copy of this?
I think you're back.
You may have a different cover. Mine looks like it's just the...
I bet yours looks like this.
Yeah.
First.
Okay, I'm sorry. I had a couple of...
Something a little different.
But anyway, you need to know the source is the Brown Center report on American education. And if we could, and I'm just going to briefly refer to this so that you could have this thought in the back of your mind, because there is a myth that many of us have bought into. And if we could turn to page 4 on that... in that document. And the second sentence starts out saying, the data on the effects of standards are analyzed to produce three findings. We'll wait for... Do they have a different copy?
Page... Is that... Mine starts with 7.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
7, 8, 9...
Yeah, that's where mine starts as well. Everyone have it?
I'm on page 4.
You may not have that.
I'm sorry. My bad.
This is the synopsis.
Okay, in which case, I will read to you from the synopsis. You can take this one to bed with you. Take the one you have. But I'll read to you from the synopsis. And it says, data on the effects of the standards are analyzed and produced three findings. One, the quality of state standards, as indicated by the well-known ratings from the Fordham Foundation, is not related to state achievement. The rigor of state standards, as measured by how high states place on cut point for students to be deemed proficient, is also unrelated to achievement. And the ability of standards to reduce variation in achievement, in other words, to reduce differences in achievement, is also weak. Basically, what this finding shows, and I'll highlight the portion that you have, is that standards are not a vacuum cleaner. They do not suck students up. You know, we as teachers have high expectations. Of course, student achievement improves, but by us printing higher standards, this document shows, and I'll highlight the portion that you have later. This document shows that standards are not a vacuum cleaner. And that even within, everybody knows, I'll turn one more page here. Oh, wait, we have the same document. But, okay, so with that thought in mind, and the idea being that there is, clear proof of that, what I would like to do is just give a brief overview of the bill and then move on to the those who are waiting to testify. I believe that before the state content and educational performance standards are adopted in the GLEs, and GLE is grade level expectations, the following should occur. The legislature will assemble a task force. They will create a process by which Alaskan state educational standards have been properly vetted by a representative of major career paths of a high school graduate. The legislature will appoint a task force. On that task force would be a member from the House, member of the Senate, representative from the Department of Labor, representative of the Department of Education, representative from Small Business Enterprise, representative from Subsistence Lifestyle, representative from Parenting and Homemaking, and three representatives chosen by the Department of Labor to represent major career destinations for high school graduates. And then somebody pointed out to me that I, slight omission, I didn't include the university or superintendent, so that will be one of the amendments that we could be looking at next week. But the assignment of the task force will be to develop a process by which state education standards are vetted to make sure that they're preparing students for higher education as well as career paths and real-life experiences. And I would like to mention that higher education itself is changing rapidly. Knowledge and skills taught to prepare students for colleges and universities will consider the current higher educational trends and prepare students for what will be, not what is or was. And it's my opinion we're preparing students for what was. But with that, if you won't mind, I'll step back, make room for testimony, and then we could have a detailed discussion after a bit.
Okay, so the request is to hold all questions of yourself?
If you don't mind, yes. And I welcome questions, welcome amendments.
Okay, so what we'll do then is move online to Stuart McDonald, who is the superintendent of the Kodiak Island Borough School District. Are you there, Mr. McDonald?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much, House Education Chair, My morning's going to be cut a little bit short. This is Stuart McDonald, Superintendent of Schools in Kodiak Island Borough School District. We're in the middle of negotiations this morning, and I'm going to have to get back to that table as we desperately hold the line on controlling the costs of education. When I was asked to speak on this, I gave this a lot of thought to really understand the complexity of this particular issue and what it means. Standards, of course, are the way we measure our product. If this was a bank and we were measuring the financial growth and how we count the money, changing those tools would mean a great deal to the whole business, because that's what our business would rely on. And education standards are something that here in Kodiak we've taken very serious. We have invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in the Alaska content standards, where we brought in all of our teachers, grade level teachers, kindergarten through sixth grade would work individually as by grade, and we worked extremely hard to make sure that every teacher understood the standards, aligned their curriculum and assessment techniques and instructional techniques. When the grade level equivalents, grade level expectations modified those Alaska content standards, we went back to the drawing board and once again had to bring everybody together and do that exact alignment, training and retraining. And then we had a reprieve where things did not change immediately, but we had new staff that we had to bring back in, and our seasoned staff that had to be refreshed. Then the assessment test itself changed, and it caused our data to look different, and we had to, again, invest heavily with curriculum specialists and assessment coordinators to come in grade level, teacher at a time, to bring this together, because we take this very serious. If we're going to be measured by the standards, then we need to teach the standards, and then we need to be able to see the results on the tests, both local formative tests we've developed ourselves to try and make sure that they align and create predictability, or it's the state test. And when we realized that this Common Core Standards was coming, we started asking ourselves the questions, okay, now what do we do to get ready for it and prepare for it? In the last few years, we've been in the middle of investing in software to change our grading practices to be able to approach this. We have developed hundreds per grade level of rubrics with our staff. This all costs an unbelievable amount of time and money. Last year, during the budget cycle that we went through, we faced pretty intensive budget cuts due to how funding works, and I know this is not a time to talk about funding, and yet, as a superintendent, making sure that I'm doing all of the things that we need to do, it is about money. We lost our capacity in, by having to trim staff, administration, increase some class size, and we lost some of our capacity to be responsive to the kinds of things I just described in this current year. The budget shortfalls we face in 2013 will, I can't even begin to describe the cutbacks that we're already in the process of making. And what this all means is any change at all, any abrupt change at all, simply will just leave us out of sync with best practices of instruction. And that's just a fact. There is no way I can recover the investment of our past behavior doing all of the right things. And that those dollars are going to be lost. And so here's the thing. I totally appreciate and understand what the feds are asking our state to do so that we could be on top of things to be able to apply for waivers and keep up with what we're supposed to do. Quickly adopting national look-alike standards or whatever the task is important. We have in Kodiak taken great pride to the fact that we've been able to raise the bar and stay in front of the curve on best instructional practices. I'm going to be just, I'm afraid, one of just a few voices to stand and say this federal push to fix schools from Washington, whether it be Common Core equivalent standards to be adopted or not, getting a little lost here. The thing is whether these standards are adopted quickly or not, I'm asking for Alaska to take a stand, move slow, fund the changes, get it right before investing in another test, and because I can tell you right now, most schools in the state will simply not have the time, money, or resources, especially in the light of the last couple of budget years, to have those resources to realign their curriculum again, train their staff again, and develop those local formative assessments again, and create the confidence in their teachers again that this stuff matters and connects to kids' learning. Every change has an impact. It's imperative that these changes are made with long-term planning, long-term funding, and a solid, realistic understanding of the economics of education. Give us a fighting chance to make sustainable adjustments for sustainable results. And I thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Superintendent McDonald. Question from committee, Representative Seaton.
thank you. I'm trying to understand what you're asking for. Are you asking to not implement the standards that were developed through the process that's taken place over the last couple of years? And are you asking to implement a new regime that would be a new adoption of standards that would be more geared to careers, career pathways that this bill calls for? Or are you asking not to go through a new reevaluation from a different aspect of standards that this bill calls for?
Well, there's the ideal of, thank you very much for your question, Representative Seaton. There's the ultimate, I guess, of what I would ask for is for school districts to have the time to be able to work with a set of standards that create predictability against the tests that we're measured against and rated and judged by and given a chance to provide the kind of instruction that industry recognizes success in our students that ensure that when we give a child a mark of success, that that mark is recognized wherever they go as, yes, they're ready and they can do what we say they can do. That's my ideal, and I'm a realist, and I understand that the Department of Education is being handed a deadline and a fast track that they have to deal with to comply with some federal requirements. And so what we're going to get is something that meets a standard for a federal requirement that will very likely not be what I just described. And so what I'm actually asking for is a compromise somewhere in the middle that says after the state does whatever it has to do or whatever is needed to preserve federal dollars or whatever the drive is there, I would like the ability to see the state truly engage in a longer process to vet standards and make sure that when they are adopted and ready to be implemented and a test is to be purchased, that each school district is given financial consideration on what it takes to create the alignment and make sure that what we're doing is really going to make a difference for each child. And that's, I suppose, what I'm asking.
One follow-up.
So
can you give me your perspective on the current state standards that you have aligned? I mean, we're hearing that the state standards have no relevancy to achievement or to performance, and that the system of state standards as currently exists is totally out of whack with where we should be with state standards. Is that your opinion that I'm hearing two things. One is that let's not be changing standards a lot, but we're also faced with the question of, are the standards totally irrelevant? Although we're measuring to them, are they really totally irrelevant to education? And they should be drastically revised. And I'd like your opinion on that.
Okay. When we're measuring student learning, having a predictable, stable measurement, even if it's imperfect, is always the preferred, because then you can have a chance to, over time, continue to compare student growth and performance against a target that's not moving. I don't know if anybody there is familiar with mechanics or any other kind of instrumentation that you use to diagnose a problem, but they have this indicator lights in the dash in your vehicle that tells you when to check the engine and when not to. We used to use a timing light that we could flash on the flywheel of an engine and synchronize things in our engine. All of those gauges and measures and meters didn't tell us everything we needed to know about an engine, but it did give us some hot points to be able to look at and be able to know when something was going well and something was not going well. That's what we lose when we continually change tests, measurements, and all of those indicators, so we lose the richness of all of our past practice and behavior. So that's when you hear people say, please don't keep changing them. It's expensive. It's hard. That's what people are saying, that the numbers keep moving and shifting, and it becomes impossible to compare our success to the past and past data. But as far as do the standards need revising and are they working and do they tell us everything that we need to know and do they have holes? Of course, the answer is yes, our standards have holes in them. Our standards are developed in a way that is one doesn't have a very clear picture from both the university and industry level to be able to say if a child can score at a certain level and if they know those certain things, there's no guarantee or piece of paper or certification that says then that means they're ready to be a welder or they're ready to be a small business owner or they're ready to go into nursing, for instance. And so we're kidding ourselves if we think our standards give us that kind of information, although professionally out there, there are things that do fill in the gaps. So here in Kodiak, we take our math standards, and we go to the industry companies that measure textbooks, tests, companies like Metametrics that create total math frameworks that can create diagnostic systems that don't leave anything out, and we fill in the gaps of whatever standards we're given, and we use that sort of thing to find the holes, and we have to patch it at the district and school level ourselves. So it would be nice to have a standard system that had the time to be developed in such a way that filled in all of the holes and that industry and all of the various endpoints that our graduates would go to would be able to have a system that once we measured that child, we'd be able to say, you have these skills measured against those standards that anywhere you're headed is going to value. And I don't know that we have that. I certainly don't know that the Common Core standards hit that. We can see holes in those. Well, there's never going to be a perfect system. So in light of maybe we're never going to get to a perfect system, there's a part of me that says, then just give me that constant measurement, like the instrument in my car or the instrument that I use to measure things on the performance of my engine that don't change, and I can fill in the gaps and understand what's missing as long as I have a constant measurement. And so either leave it alone so I can use the constant measurement, or let's really get it right and not just give me another thing that's going to have holes in it.
Thank you, Superintendent McDonald. That was excellent statement. And we will let you go. I might call on you later, sir. I realize you appreciate your leaving your negotiations, and we might call on you later to testify, or even if you have further thoughts, I'd be glad to draw in your expertise to, down the road if you have anything you'd like to add. With that in mind, I'd like to find, is Grant Funk still online, or has he got on his airplane? Okay, Grant Funk, are you online, sir?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I realize your testimony is time-sensitive as well. Would you please identify yourself for the record and give your testimony, please?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee, for allowing me to testify. For the record, my name is Grant Funk. I've lived in Western Alaska for nearly 20 years and in the village of Hooper Bay for the past 13 years. I've raised five of our six children in this region. Several of our children are currently raising their families in Western Alaska. My kids have had the best of both the public school system as well as homeschool education. I'm an emergency medical instructor as well as an aviation instructor. I've volunteered in the local school teaching these skills for 10 years as well as teaching aviation to the middle school and high school students full-time for 2 years. I currently teach an after-school aviation class as well as direct the local team center, which has after-school educational programs. Overall, I've been involved in education on various levels for 26 years. I am an advisory school board member. I'm also the 2012 Alaska Air Carriers Association Community Service Award winner for my work in aviation education in our community. I'm requesting today that the state take the necessary time to provide education standards that lay the foundation for the future success of all students. We've entered a technological age that has presented new opportunities and challenges for this generation. Their foundational years in elementary, middle, and high school need to be the trailhead for a successful future. We have much cultural and geographical diversity in our state. That diversity should be reflected in the state educational standards. This diversity is reflected in my own children. Three of our six kids completed a course of study in college. Two completed technical training. One is still in high school but planning on college. As an educator and as a parent, I want to provide the best avenues of success for my students as individuals. They need a set of standards to act as a guiding boundary into the future they desire to pursue. So with that in mind, I would like to request that the new standards take a step in the direction that would eliminate the one-size-fits-all approach. We have students that are hoping to go to college following graduation, and a greater majority of students that will go into the skilled labor force. There needs to be at least two sets of standards to better prepare these students for productive careers in their areas of interest. A career technical education track would give students the opportunity to learn applicable skills for jobs that are more readily available in rural Alaska. Aviation, healthcare, commercial fishing, and construction have opportunities that do not require a college degree. There is also a need in this category for small business training as well as classes in small government. College students often leave the rural areas and enter job markets appropriate to their degree. That leaves others to start the small businesses and sit on the various local councils and boards. The middle and high school education system could go a long way toward preparing students as lifelong learners and leaders in their local communities through a CTE track standard. One Western Alaska CTE teacher I met with gave me the example of six of his former students. They were hired in various capacities right after high school and are averaging $40,000 each annual income. These students will not be a part of the welfare system. They'll have an opportunity to fund further training or have their employee provide advancement training. They're becoming productive local citizens without a college education. If there are CTE standards, the system is freed up for a college track set of standards that would challenge and prepare the college-bound high school students with advanced math and science classes. The upper-level students are often the neglected group in the education process in rural schools. They need guidelines that will provide realistic challenges, better preparing them for college studies. Bringing in a vocational track as well as a college track would not only benefit the student, but the state in the years to come. When a person has a job, they're less likely to wind up on the welfare system or in the court system. At a recent seminar on international business, the speaker said, quote, "Worldwide, one of the best things you can do for a person is to give them meaningful work," end quote. That brings me to my final thoughts on plotting the course for the future direction of education in the state. One of our embarrassing statistics as a state is the high suicide rate. Students graduating ill-prepared for the job force or even for a subsistence lifestyle are left to wander the streets of our cities or rural communities looking for something to do. Hopelessness takes over and lives that could have made a difference in the world are lost. One teacher has been in Hooper Bay for 13 years told me that she has lost 40 students or former students to suicide or tragic death. And even as I write, our community is again dealing with suicide of a young man. It takes its toll on families and friends as well as teachers and staff. The education system suffers as students and teachers are emotionally functioning at less than optimum performance. The education system is not responsible for the high suicide rate. I do feel, however, that it can go a long way toward prevention by providing standards that allow a student to learn the relevance of an education. Vocational math, applied hands-on science, and technical reading all connect them to a future with hope of becoming productive. These type of classes have the non-college-bound student give the non-college-bound student a reason to succeed in math and science because they understand how it relates to the world they live in. As an aviation instructor, I've had the joy of watching kids connect math to life skills as they calculate takeoff performance of an aircraft on a flight simulator. Students disinterested in science became consumed by science fair projects that utilized aviation issues. Their eyes were open to applications of vocational math that encouraged them to learn because it had immediate applications in their world. In conclusion, I asked the legislature to pass House Bill 330, allowing time to gain insights from the education industry. In doing so, we'll prepare a generation with a measure of hope for future jobs that will provide income for their families as well as boost self-confidence and self-reliance. Anything done to improve the family has the potential of decreasing the suicide rate. Thank you for this opportunity to address this critical issue.
Yeah. And thank you, Grant, for taking time to testify. I know you need to. Do you have time for a question or two, or do you need to run to your airplane, sir?
I've got a few minutes.
Any questions? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I really appreciate your testimony. I'm trying to balance that with what we've heard, constantly, that the requirements of the new workforce and in many jobs are the same skills that are needed for those going into college. And so what I'm hearing you say is, two tracks, different skills, different sets of goals, and which seems to be at odds with the other thing, that jobs are becoming much more technologically and skill. The skill sets needed for both those are the same, and I'm wondering whether you're talking about changing the skill sets that are required, or are you talking more about project-based and theme-based education and in engaging students in teaching the skills by utilizing the whether it's aviation or rocketry or hunt or subsistence hunting or those kind of things. We've seen different districts engaging in that kind of education, but still keeping the same standards and teaching to those same skills. So could you address that for me as to which of those kind of models you're addressing?
Yes, and my realm of experience is far less than the superintendents that are testifying today, and I can speak from the experience as a parent working with my kids through the standards system as well as working in the school and just observing the system. And what I've seen happen is that the current standard system and requirements put on the school, especially a school that is a low-performing school, as they attempt to reach safe harbor, oftentimes eliminates the higher-end students from the process because they have already achieved a high enough standard to get by. The low-end students are also kind of lost in the shuffle. It's the ones that are just below the line that we attempt to improve those test scores to get them above the median line so that we can attain safe harbor. And so I see this as an area where we're failing, and one of the things that I see that would benefit both college-bound and non-college-bound students is that a set of standards that would guide schools to push the college-bound students to a higher level of math and science skills that are beyond what would be needed for a labor force technical training skill level. And that's why I've separated the two and said I would like to see both a college track and a vocational track. The vocational track needs some guidance in it as well. There's a lot that can be done with a vocational track, and there's already, as I understand, some financial commitments from the state to improve the career technical education department, and the standards would guide those finances into being more directed toward providing a broad-based education that would give them training that will allow job opportunities right after high school. So the two sets of standards are what I would prefer. I know that there are schools that are using various types of venues to teach math and science and trying to accommodate the college and the vocational-minded students, but I feel like that there is a need to kind of modify that so that there's more guidance on both ends of the spectrum.
Very good. Representative Wilson, then we do need to move on for other people that also have time-sensitive testimony here. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate it's obvious that you give a lot of yourself to help children, and I that's very admirable. Many countries actually have two different directions to go, and I think maybe that is something that we need to really think about. Even with subsistence, they need to think, okay, if I'm going to shoot something for our family to put in the freezer, I need to look at how fast the animal is traveling, how fast the bullet travels, and so even then you can get into a level of quite deep level of math that they would be interested in just by the different way that you present it, I would assume. Is that correct?
That's correct. And yet there's also in our technological age that we're in right now, even a subsistence hunter needs a lot of technological, or to benefit from technological skills, because subsistence is very rarely the only means of providing for a family. So there needs to be some technical training beyond that. But you can utilize those avenues to teach the math and science skills and improve those levels. But it would be really good to have a set of standards that would prepare students to do subsistence, as well as to step into technically trained areas that they could also work locally in.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Grant. I believe also online we have Peggy Cowan. Peggy, are you there?
Hello, I am.
Okay, Peggy, please, for the record, identify yourself and give your testimony. Also, we want to mention that Peggy was, besides being the superintendent in, where she is now, she was superintendent in Juneau and also worked with the Department of Education for many years as the science go-to person. So, Peggy, again, identify yourself and give your testimony, please.
Thank you. I'm Peggy Cowan, superintendent of schools for the North Slope Borough School District, and good morning, Chairman Dick, members of the committee. Thank you for inviting me to speak today and for your consideration of House Bill 330 and other education issues. I'm grateful for your dedication to education of the children of our state. I've been listening and know you have a busy agenda, and I will try to be brief. I reviewed House Bill 330, state standards, Representative Dick's sponsor statement, and the material distributed to school districts by the Department of Education and Early Development, inviting comment on the current draft of the standards. I agree with Representative Dick's emphasis on the importance of the investment in state standards and their effects on and use by the districts. Our district is in a five-year process of comprehensive curriculum development, alignment, and integration and mapping, and the state standards and grade level expectations are at the heart of the rigorous academic content for this curriculum. We're getting the relevancy and the link to the community and the culture and language of the Inupiat from the local people, but the content, the rigor, the academics, we rely on the state standards and grade level expectations. I also agree with Representative Dick's sponsor statement's emphasis on a thorough vetting process for the state standards. The Department of Education and Early Development was right in extending the time between introduction to the State Board of Education and adoption rather than the typical cycle of the next meeting. This is a step in the right direction to allow thorough vetting. As Representative Dick explained, industry representatives and employers are important in the review of the standards. And industry and employers are not likely to review the state standards without the state being intentional. As a point of reference, let me summarize the process in the North Slope Borough School District. The district's director of curriculum instruction and assessment is reviewing them herself and getting teams within the district to review them and provide recommendations for our district's feedback to the Department of Education and Early Development. These teams are made up primarily of members of our district's own curriculum committees who are guiding the work on our curriculum, and for the most part, our teachers. We do include what we call steering committees, which are made up of parents, businesses, and community members in the review of our own curriculum, but we are not including these people in the district's review of the state standards. I do not know, but I expect that the review by other districts is similar. So the district's review of the standards will not elicit industry review. To get that review, the state will need to invite and solicit it intentionally. Thank you again for your service on this committee and to the students in your state. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Peggy. Any questions from committee? Peggy, you answered every question we had before we asked it. Thank you. Appreciate it. Also online, we have Superintendent Joe Banghart. Joe, are you still online?
Yes, I am, Representative Dick.
Okay, please, thank you for your patience, and please identify yourself for the record and give your testimony, sir.
Thank you. I am Joe Banghart, the interim superintendent for the Denali Borough School District, and Representative Dick and committee, Education Committee, House Education Committee, I appreciate this opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 330, and I have been in the state for the past 14 years and have had the opportunity of serving on various standards committees, and have always been working to cooperate with our state and the entire movement to build standards so that we can have the professional and valuable information of assessments to align us with other states. Now, our state standards are vital, and I agree with testimony given earlier for the progress of our children, but at the same time, the proposal of House Bill 330, which I am testifying again in support of, would offer the involvement of as mentioned in the proposal, the Department of Labor and Workforce, and also the continued involvement of Department of Education and Early Development. And then throw in the key elements of small business owners and subsistence lifestyle and parents, and then major career destinations. I am convinced that this type of partnership would be the very foundation that would provide a consistent state network of business education, parents, and other partners for career and technical training that would help us continue in our drive for standards that would also link together the labor force. Our state stands in vital need of this type of a task force for the vetting of all future educational standards, linking them together for this support. This task force could provide information for resources available across the state in one location because of the initiative of the state to drive it. This link would build a firm foundation for future grant potential and partnerships and combination of the other state standards as we would possibly pause in the process and look at this linkage. And it would tie all the major areas of standards together. Eventually, I could see this happening, the language arts and the math and the science and geography and et cetera. Now, how can we not afford to stop and evaluate our current educational standards and properly align them as much as possible with clear pathways to successful careers in our state in particular. You know, accountability is best found in the involvement of multiple partners that design not only the assessments for each performance standard, but consider the application of these skills in actual real-life practice. You know, accountability measures in this process would include not only the academic growth, which is currently measured, as has been testified to and clearly shown, but it would also measure employment skills and successful job placement. You know, a true accountability is being tested by all of us, our legislators, our Department of Education, superintendents, through consideration of such a task force. This approach would help, I'm sure, eventually lower unemployment and provide employees that are trained even to a greater level than what they currently are. And it would encourage this accountability at every level. And, you know, if we ignore this vetting of our standards, we are really, I think, in a way, turning our backs on the future of Alaska and our children and helping them link all of the possibility of careers together. I am really fortunate to be here in the Denali Burrell School District, and one of such partnerships that we have, just to give you an illustration of what it can do, is with the U.S. Department of Interior and the National Park Service, the Denali National Park, and we have students that are building cabins for the park in a partnership, and our staff is currently working to tie all the standards across the board together, because they are all essential. Your language arts and your math and your history and your culture, all essential in such a project. So, again, I just use that as an example of what we're doing here, and speak this morning in support of House Bill 330. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for this opportunity to testify.
Okay, and thank you, Superintendent Bankhart. I will tell a story that I heard that the Denali Borough School District had just had some logistical issues, and so they'd hired a new superintendent. Within 2 weeks, he'd already cleared up 90% of the problems. And I said, "Who is that?" And they said, "Joe Bankhart." I said, "I know that guy." So he has a good history in the state and is definitely a problem solver. Any questions, Committee Representative Seaton?
thank you. I'm kind of – I've been on several task force, higher education, and the K-12 task force and a geographic cost differential, you know, where we've had legislators and all. And I'm trying to figure out what the vision is that this committee that's going to be a broad spectrum are going to create – I mean, their purpose is under F – shall create a process for vetting of the proposed educational standards before they're adopted by the board. And you've talked about all the standards in all of these different areas, whether they're science, arts, skills for healthy life, and all of those things. We have state standards that have been worked on for a couple of years now, because we didn't adopt the Common Core ones. We worked in-state on our own. The vetting process is open to public comment for 6 months. What do you envision as a different vetting process by all of these diverse groups on the individual standards for each one of these curriculum areas, and how do you see that vetting process? Is that to have veto power over what's developed by the curriculum specialists in the from the districts that come together to create the standards, or what do you envision by vetting by of the standards in these every content area by this broad spectrum of individuals, and what do you see as is this veto power on any of the proposed content area standards? Can you give me your vision of what this would actually be and how it would accomplish?
Yes, sir. I could. I can't speak to veto power because I can only speak to the need of the linkage of business, and that linkage being driven by the state, because I agree with prior testimony that if the state leads the way in bringing our industry to the table, then they could be involved in a way that would help the educators involved draw those career path lines in a way that would help our students move and understand the job market out there from a state perspective. So I see this more as bringing big business to the table to understand the process and have input in the process about the careers that are there as a statewide effort. and not just local efforts. Yes, we have a lot of great local efforts that school districts are currently doing, and you've heard testimony of those, and that's great, but I see that we need this state effort to help our children be aware and know of more of what's there and have these people at the table. I hope that clarifies it some.
Okay, one more quick follow-up, and then we do need to move on.
So your vision is of the employment community creating the standards, or of having the curriculum standards there and then being vetted by this broad group or this vetting process?
Having all of those mentioned in the bill at the table and have them there involved in the process, knowing that educators are there who can possibly better define the standards, but industry would have an input and understanding in it so that we can see that clear linkage, and that would support our children. That's how I envision it.
Okay, thank you.
And just maybe, Representative Seaton, to respond quickly to your question, my intent in writing this bill was to let that that task force define that as to what that vetting process would be. I mean, I had my idea, but as you'll hear, and Dr. Chip McMillan, if you want to come forward while we're wrapping up here, my intent, even in calling people to testify, there's many like Dr. McMillan, and I don't even agree what the standard should be. But so I was trying to get a broad spectrum of people that would speak to this issue, and my hope is with this this task force, there'd be a broad spectrum there that would even speak to the vetting process itself.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is what is meant by the vetting process. Some people are talking about creating the standards, and other people, I think, are talking about reviewing the standards, and that's that are created by the system or by the curriculum developers. But I'm hearing different people saying that what they want to create is a new complex that would write the standards, would develop the standards, and I'm hearing other people say that they want to have the standards created by curriculum developers and then have people review them. But if there's not a veto process or a process to rewrite those standards, I'm just trying to figure out what is the vision for the vetting process and what vetting process means.
I think excellent question, and let's you and I get together and maybe define that what that means. Dr. Chip McMillan, please introduce yourself for the record, sir.
I'm Chip McMillan. I'm an assistant professor with the School of Education at UAS here in Juneau, and I'd say my principal duty is the preparation of K-8 teachers to teach math and science here in Alaska. And I'd like to focus on what Representative Seaton has been asking. I can tell the last couple hours he's been really focused on something, and I feel like I should try to address his concerns. Right up front, I feel the standards have a fairly large hole in them, and it's basically STEM. And the largest part of the STEM that represents this hole is the engineering part.
Excuse me, would define STEM for the committee.
Yeah, I'm sorry, science, technology, engineering, and math. And so the standards need to be reviewed, not necessarily moved. I heard Stuart loud and clear. He doesn't want a moving target, and I think the target just needs to be clarified. But it's not currently in an adequate form because it's missing the STEM. And I think the STEM piece addresses also what Grant was speaking about earlier. And so that's going to be the focus of my testimony here is the standards aren't compliant with STEM right at the moment. So everybody is aware that the United States has not fared well in math and science the last couple of decades. We all know that. That's not really new, but the STEM focus, I think, is relatively new, and it's a better focus on where we're short in competition with the rest of the world in technology, quantitative disciplines. And so what I think I'd like to do is read a couple quotes for you. We're doing students, parents, and America's competitiveness a disservice by not demanding higher standards for STEM learning. This is from Craig Barrett, former CEO of Intel. He's the current chair of Change the Equation, a group of 110 business executives from Exxon, Lockheed, Martin, Google, Dow Chemical, et cetera. It turns out that the most common educational background for the Fortune 500 CEOs in the U.S. is not business or law, but engineering. And I'll say I can't imagine anyone not having heard about STEM in the news. It's just like everywhere. And I've been reviewing every state and their approach to STEM, and I have yet to encounter a state that doesn't have some kind of statewide initiative in STEM. It doesn't matter if it's Mississippi or North Dakota. They've all got it. And you might say, well, so who cares if everybody else is doing it? That's not a reason for us to do it. But in a minute, I'll give you a reason why it does matter that everybody else is doing STEM, and I don't think we are. I got this from the Department of Labor. 42 out of 50 highest-paying jobs in Alaska are in STEM fields. And also from the Department of Labor, apparently one-third of all engineering jobs in Alaska are done by engineers who don't live here. So that means we pay them, give them a paycheck, and they take their paycheck back to Wyoming or Arkansas or, you know, whatever. And so for that reason alone, I think we've got to focus our K-12 education a bit more on STEM and particularly engineering. We don't have any, well, I should phrase it precisely, we do not have the word engineering anywhere in our content standards. And to be fair, we have a section of our standards called science and technology that implies engineering, but is no direct reference to engineering. And I should make clear that I'm being critical of our standards here, but I played as big a role in any deficiencies that there are in the standards as anyone else, because I participated in writing the content standards in science and the performance standards, as well as the as SBA items, you know, test questions in sciences. I participated in all that, and I want to thank Peggy Cowan for having invited me in that process when she worked for the Department of Ed. So anyway, I'm taking blame wherever it needs to fall for any deficiencies in our standards, and I don't think anyone the department has been negligent in this hole that I'm claiming exists in our standards. When I started this process in the early 90s, I'd never heard of STEM. I had no idea what it was. So this is relatively new. So while I'm claiming that we're deficient now in engineering, particularly in our standards, I'd like to have you consider the possibility that actually engineering and technology were core standards, K-12 here in Alaska in the past. You could say it was even a mandatory part of the curriculum. And I'm sorry, I should have known better that I could have used PowerPoint, but pretend I'm displaying a kayak, split bow kayak up here on the screen, or a Athabascan snowshoe, a Tlingit fish trap. These even today are marvels of technology, exquisite examples of technology, and it was engineering that produced them. And the engineering that I'm talking about are things like problem solving, thinking outside the box, being innovative, and having a quality which I understand industry finds lacking in our students these days, which is called grit. And by grit, I mean the ability to stick with the problem for more than 7 minutes. You know, our current generation of kids have got a 30-second attention span, and industry finds this not suitable. So these are qualities that come under the heading of engineering, which we are not focusing on because they're not part of the standards. And I guess my claim is that if there isn't leadership in the state for engineering and STEM, if it's not made official, and the standards is one way to do that, then it will not appear in the classroom. You know, teachers look at their curriculum, they look at their standards, they look at the SBAs, and if they don't see engineering there anywhere, then they won't devote time to it, even if they know in their heart that it's the right thing to do. So I think the standards are a great place to start to put engineering in the context of STEM explicitly in the standards. And, of course, we have the math standards are about, I don't know, we're on schedule to adopt them in June. And, again, there's no, the word engineering does not appear anywhere in those standards. And it would, in my view, it would be a tragedy to adopt these standards. And then that's what we got for the next 5 or 6 years. And we'll be way behind the rest of the country, which I'm now telling you is sending their engineers here and taking their paychecks back down south. And that's not good for us. So I support this bill in the sense that if you invited industry people to vet the standards, you would hear from ARCO and Greens Creek and Usabelli and everybody else who are employers in this state, and they would say, well, these are great, except they're missing this, this, and this. And then we stick those into the standards. So it's not necessarily throwing standards out or completely revising them, but there is this hole, I think. And now's the chance to do it. And if we don't do it now, we're going to be 10 years behind the rest of the country and have even fewer engineers or engineering thinking, and that's a detriment. So I really appreciate your inviting me to speak with you today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Question? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is excellent thinking, because why would you have teachers that haven't been taught those things themselves deciding what the standards would be? And not that there hasn't been a lot of work put in them or anything like that, because there definitely has. So you're saying that what we probably need to do is look at the standards that we have, not throw them out, look at what we have, and see where we're lacking, and trying to infuse mm-hmm. and maybe look at some things that aren't really that usable and put in the things that are.
Exactly. Infuse is the key word.
Okay. That's wonderful. Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
And I guess what I'm trying to do is figure out, we've got standards, they're out for public review. If industry isn't coming to the table now and commenting, engineers aren't coming and saying we need to vet these standards in the process that we have. I mean, what I'm hearing from other people testifying is, I shouldn't say they're too tough, they're too specific. I mean, we've got trigonometry standards before us. I can't even, I was doing slide rule, I didn't even have a calculator when I took trig, but you know, these things are terminologies and everything. Some of what I'm hearing is people say, well, the standard shouldn't involve those things. The standard should be much more broad-based in, you know, in what students are doing right now. So in your view, vetting of the standards by this broad group of individuals that are going to be legislators and Department of Labor, small business owner, a subsistence lifestyle, a parent, those, that is going to get you where you want to be? Or what do you envision as this vetting process for standards, and other than saying, oh, there's a hole here, we need to create standards to increase engineering as a component?
Well, it's an excellent question, and I'm sorry I don't have a one-sentence answer, but I think I can contribute to what you're asking by pointing out, you already know this, the standards are 100 pages long, and so asking a CEO from ARCO to go spend 100, you know, to look at 100 pages of math standards and then go to the science standards and so on is asking a lot. But I think these people are very willing, eager, to spell out the attributes they need in their workforce that they do not see currently. And that's a start. We've got the standards, and we've got what industry is telling us they need and they don't have now. And then I don't know if you want to ask them to find a place to stick them in the standards, or if somebody else who's an educator type can say, okay, I hear what you're saying. This is where that should go. So it's a very good question. I do have trouble picturing CEOs sitting down and rewriting the standards. But they certainly, you can do a pretty quick survey of the standards and tell, this is not there, this is not there, this is not there, and that can be done in a short period of time. And so to that extent, I think industry leaders could be called vetters. But if they're not willing to do that, at least they could say what it is that they need in their workforce. And somebody could say, well, that's obviously not here in our standards. I hope that's helpful.
And Representative Seaton, the whole purpose of the task force is to develop a process by which that happens. The people on that you see in the list are not the vetters. They would be the ones who are speaking to the process by which the vetting would occur.
And Mr. Chairman, I understand that what I'm trying to do is get some idea of, I mean, if we don't have an idea of what some models would be, and of course they would develop the model, but if we don't have an idea of what this vetting process could look like, you know, throwing something to a task force and saying create something, and it's not, we're looking at ABCD models, you guys pick the best one or figure, but if I don't have any conception of what two or three models are that could be used for this process, that would, I mean, like the testifier saying, we can't expect a CEO to go through hundreds of pages of math and then science and everything. I don't think that that's going to happen. So I'm just trying to get an idea of what this vetting process could look like. I'm not trying to define it exactly, but I'm hearing vastly different ideas from the people from Subsistence Alaska have a vastly different testimony. We heard from Western Alaska was vastly different than, you know, STEM, very specific incorporation of engineering. And so I'm just trying to figure out what's the general structure of how this would go forward. That's what I'm trying to figure out, instead of just punting to a group of people and saying, you figure something out. I'm trying to figure out at least the range of what we're trying to have them figure.
As usual, Representative C, you've grasped the thing instantly, and you've already drilled down to the essence of it. So let's do, I'm saying that by he gets it all, always gets it instantly. So thank you for that thought, and that's certainly something to ponder, and we can certainly have that conversation.
Yeah, I'm just hoping as people testify, they can let us know what their vision of the bill is. I mean, we have people supporting the bill, and I'm just not quite sure what the vision is, and that's what I'm asking for.
Good question. Thank you. Okay. Representative Wilson, then we do need to move on because the commissioner has been sitting here for 2 hours.
Thank you. Mr. McMillan, is there anything that you don't see? Because this is something brand new. We're really wanting to do something to make changes to our education system that's going to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
And now, is there something that you have percolating or thought about that's not in here that you think should be?
Well, I appreciate the question, and it really is the key question. And that's how to translate standards and curriculum and SBAs down to the classroom, the actual interacting with students kind of thing. And I picture these dispositions that I mentioned that I think engineers consider the core to being an engineer, which is problem solving and being creative and having stick-to-itiveness and so on. That just has to be made explicit somehow in these standards. And it gets back to Representative Seaton's point of, like, how detailed do you need to be? And it's a little difficult to answer. For me, personally, I consider the standards to be too vague because I'm a science teacher, I guess, and when it says something like, talk about energy, it's like, well, what does that mean? But for others, maybe they would prefer the standards to be more general, and then the curriculum writers really get down to the details. I guess all I can say is I need to see in the classroom, starting way at the younger ages, kindergarten and first grade, students exposed to situations which demand problem solving and demand realizing that there isn't just one answer. Multiple answers are acceptable, and to be able to stick with it and keep working to get that optimal solution. And I would be happy to work on that, but I guess I can't give an equation on exactly how to get that into the classroom, but it has to end up in the classroom.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. McMillan. If you're right here, you're local, so if we need to call on you again, we will. And thank you for your testimony, sir.
I'd be honored, and please do. Thank you very much.
And Commissioner Hanley, we only have 11 minutes left, sir. So if you just want to give a introduction to your thoughts, and I promise you, you can have all the time you need later to give us your perspective.
Thank you, Chair Dick. I think I will just give some introductory comments with the time that's left. For the record, my name is Mike Hanley. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. And I appreciate all the testimony that's been shared today. And I have to say that we are in agreement on most things in regards to our standards. The sponsor statement from Representative Dick, they are foundational. They are the target that we have set for our kids, or that we are setting for our kids, on what they need to be successful beyond high school in any career that they choose, both in their town, in their state, or out of state. And I think that that's the obligation we have, the moral and legal obligation that we have, to make sure that we keep all the doors of opportunity open to them. Vetting process, I mean, we're in agreement. This has to be done right. It has to be done correctly. The thing I haven't quite grasped is that we haven't, most of the testimony didn't seem to speak directly to the bill, but spoke to the importance of a vetting process. And so just as a brief introduction, I guess I would, the implication seems to be that there's a huge gap in our process of standard development. And as you know, we spent about 2 years now developing our standards, referencing what is necessary both in Alaska and what the rest of the country is using. We have chosen not to be a Common Core state, but we have referenced those standards because we recognize that if the rest of the country has a certain set of rigor, that it would probably be erroneous for us to have our own set that was something lower than what the rest of the country is, because the fact of the matter is our kids are competing with kids from around the country. As Chip just mentioned, that people are coming up here for jobs and taking their money back home. Those are the people that our own kids are competing with. So it's important to recognize where we are, not just statewide, but nationally and globally as well. For 2 years, we've had over 250 people around the state, from around the state, working on revising and developing the standards. It's been a wide open process, and I think you've had the one of the materials out there was the people who have been invited to and have been participating in there. There is a huge portion. I won't read it all. AFL-CIO, Alaska Apprenticeship Training, Computer Training, Culinary, Department of Labor and Workforce Development, Operating. I mean, this is loaded. Our goal is to get the input of the stakeholders in our state, not to have some kind of secret process. So the work has been exhaustive. The work has been vetted to the point, so over 2 years it's been vetted. Now it was mid-90s before we did a full adoption previously on our standards. So there hasn't been a lot of shifting. There's been a couple of revisions since then. But this isn't a process that is suddenly taking place because we're being pressured by the federal government. And I know that there was some trying to make some connections between NCLB and, we have to get this done. I surely haven't felt that pressure. As a matter of fact, I've stated both to Senator Murkowski and others that it's important for Alaska to do it right, not do it fast. And I think that we're moving in that direction. So I guess in that sense, I'm in agreement with the testimony here. Let's do it right. The question is, and the concern stated in the sponsor statement is that it hasn't been vetted enough with the workforce. And I'll say we've invited and we've pursued the workforce extensively. We have gotten minimal input. We have gotten some, but we've gotten minimal input. One of the reasons we've decided to take the standards that have been developed to this point and extend the comment period is to allow that vetting process, the integrity of the vetting process, to continue. And typically we'll just put it out there, we let people know that it's out there, and we just wait for comments to come in. In this case, we're doing webinars once a month. We've done two of them already. We're doing five community meetings, some specifically and intentionally set up for workforce. We'll have them in five different communities around the state with that intent of really getting these things, you know, getting the last bit of insight and input into how these need to be adjusted. And I think it's a perfect opportunity for Chip to attend one of those or attend a webinar or to just to submit his insight into what needs to be in there. So we're in agreement on the importance of a good set of standards and how they're vetted. In regards to this process, I guess right now I consider us to have an exhaustive and open process. If the concern is to have more input from the workforce, I think that could be easily done. You know, it could be, you know, a mandate to, you know, make sure that it, you know, input is included. We've done it voluntarily. It's not, you know, because I think it's important. It's not mandated. It could be mandated. I do wonder about a process right now that's totally open, and then incorporating a task force of eight that's determined by two. And I'm not speaking to any individuals. I don't know who they will be, but a task force of eight determined by two that then takes, well, was an open process and change, you know, is the determination of eight people. And I don't know if that extra layer is necessary in the process that we already have. So there are several things I'd like to speak to specifically about where we are. You know, I can speak to our scores and our rankings. I would like to speak to some implications in regards to NCLB. But I think just in closing for this introductory, I will say that we follow federal regulations and protocol for the way we develop our standards as well. And so that's an important part of it. It speaks to rigorous standards. It speaks to including all stakeholders. It speaks to including educators in the process. So it's important for us to make sure we're following those processes as well as the ones we believe are important for our state. So I think I'll close with that and allow, you know, a few minutes for questions.
And Commissioner, we'll ask you back as many times as necessary. So I apologize for the short time, but I think
I understand.
The other testimony was really needed to hear that. Representative Pruitt and Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, one of the questions that I wanted to ask, and it relates a little bit to the bill here, is there's a lot of discussion in here about representation or the influence of the Labor Department as well. And I think there can be a fine line between it, when it comes to workforce development and preparing tomorrow's future with the Labor Department, Department of Education. One of the things I'd like to know is, in your view, what is the line where the education and early development, where you guys almost step aside and then Department of Labor needs to come in? What I'm concerned about is we could, with the piece of legislation that's in front of us, is maybe we might have too many cooks in the fire here or in the kitchen and too many people trying to influence this process. And I'm just trying to understand, where does the crossover take place or not take place?
Sure. To the Chair, Representative Pruitt, we work collaboratively with that department, you know, in all kinds of things, in the CTE plan development and all those things. So that's not an issue at all. We've worked with them to get input. I talked specifically to Click about naming some people that we could get for these standards. And my understanding of the bill would be not adding cooks, but to just change cooks. it would be to take it from the Department of Education and put it with workforce development. So I don't know if we'd have more. I guess I don't fully understand. That didn't seem to be addressed. I mean, if the concern is the workforce influence or the lack thereof, I didn't understand that piece, to be honest with you, of that. So I think it would just change hands in how standards are developed. And I'm not sure how much input. I know that they'd be presented to us after they've been developed. And I guess that would be presented to us to give to the state board, I think. But I imagine that would be explained later or fleshed out or maybe clarified. I didn't fully understand.
Thank you.
And also, Commissioner Hanley, we have one more question, but if you do, you reference AFL-CIO, and I understand there was a number of people who were invited, but it would be good to make, if we could next time, maybe have reference to people that were actually participated. Okay? So, Representative Wilson.
Thank you. I'm just trying to figure out, you've gone through the of making those standards, and when we talk about standards, it's not all of the standards. You were working specifically on, was it science standards or was it math, or what standards and what grade?
The ones we're working on now that we've put before the board are reading, writing, and math. We've called the core standards for grades K through 12.
Oh, okay. Now, when you're waiting for comment period, is it just open and you're hoping that people will comment, or have you invited specific industries? I don't understand quite that much, because a lot of us are just busy and we don't pay attention to stuff like that. So has there been invitations to different agencies or different industries to look at them and see how they can be better? How does that work?
Through the chair, typically if it's something that's relatively benign, it's a change in simple cleaning up of a regulation or something, we'll just put it out for comment and we won't go pursue comment. For this, we're actively pursuing comments. And so we have put those webinars out. We have I've let all the superintendents know. I've asked superintendents. I've had two teleconferences just in the last couple of days saying, hey, get people from your communities together. Get people from your staff together and just give us some input on this. We send out regular emails, and I'll just read. There's a list of people here. I'll just read a few of them, but we send these out specifically in regards to these standards. And part of this list is Alaska Chamber of Commerce, numerous local chambers of commerce, directors of Alaska Rotaries, UA chancellors, faculty at ILSAVIC, AVTEC, Department of Labor, high school technical programs, NACTEC, SAVIC, UTLITNAUVIC, UA student governments, AFN, Alaska Native Heritage Center, AFL-CIO, Disability Center, Institute of the North, Best Beginnings, Head Start, 20 of the Alaska leading employers. So these are invitations to please be involved. We're having meetings. Let us know. So we are really being aggressive, I think, in getting the input. And that's just about a third of that list. But
do you have – I would just
go ahead.
Like to add, have you asked the mining organization to look at it? Have you asked the oil and gas organizations to look at it? Have you, some of the fishing industry to look at it?
Right.
Because we want the kids to be able to get jobs when they leave, and our main industries in Alaska, if they have a say, they might have some good suggestions. I have no idea, but it might be a good idea.
We're going to have to wrap this up, but Commissioner, please come back.
We
realize that you certainly have a different view than we do, and it's a valuable viewpoint. So with that in mind, Monday, September 27, 8 a.m. in this room, we'll hear a superintendent presentation from Nome School District, then HB 242, Public School Funding and Digital Learning. And at the sponsor's request, we will postpone HB 272, Student Loan Interest Reductions, to Wednesday, February 29. With no further business, and I hope everybody realized that I didn't get to testify, we're adjourned at 10:04.